This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. Recovery is a journey with many twists and turns and mountains to climb. Many people on the recovery journey discover new things about who they are and what they're capable of achieving. My guest today, Jay Viola, has had firsthand knowledge of the ways that we all could change in recovery. After working to overcome his addiction, Jay became a biofeedback specialist, a group facilitator, and a sober living house manager at Rebos, which is a treatment center in Los Angeles. Jay is also a mixed martial arts fighter who has won 2 title belts so far in his career. Jay is here today to talk to us about how he focuses on his many pursuits while also staying balanced and attentive to his recovery needs. He'll also talk to us about ways we can all get in touch with our inner strengths and talents to reach our highest levels in recovery. Jay, welcome to the show. So happy to have you with me today.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So it's just amazing to read all these accomplishments off in the 2.5 years I know that you've been sober and really so adamant in changing your life for the better in so many ways. And I just am really proud of you. And I think you're just such a great example for a lot of people that are on that road to recovery. So bravo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a journey and a challenge.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about that. What I mean, you know, you were obviously you had done MMA before. You were a boxer when you were younger. But what are, like, you know, and getting back to that, I think passion is so wonderful. And I always encourage clients to kind of find a hobby or something that lights them up from the inside. So was this something that naturally just came back to you? Does it light you up from the inside? And how did this kind of play such a part in your recovery?
It's been absolutely huge in my life and my recovery. I'm a huge, huge advocate of, you know what I mean, not only, you know, doing some kind of a recovery-based program to stay sober, but finding what you're passionate about and pursuing that. And also, you know, it's healthy diet and, you know, working out. And it just so happens that what I'm passionate about coincides with my diet and my working out. So it's made things so much easier for me. But, you know, it's phenomenal. I've been fighting really my whole life in one sense or another. And about 10 years ago when I got into MMA and back into fighting, it's really, really changed my life for the better. Most of the great qualities that I have today, I can trace back to something that happened to me during my, you know, fighting and training career, and they've been instilled in me that way. But that being said, those things didn't help me stay sober by themselves. I needed to combine them with some kind of recovery program.
Right. And I think that's great that you mentioned that, because it's like mind, body, spirit, right? It's like trying to find a way to feed that mind, feed the body, feed the spirit. And I think it's sometimes people, you know, get off balance because they just go to meetings or they just, you know, work out or they just focus on a job. And, you know, we really have to make sure, I think, that we're balanced in all those parts of our lives.
Absolutely.
So when people ask you, like, how did you, you know, how do I find my passion? I know you work with people in treatment all the time, one-on-one, you're on the front lines, and I know people look up to you. So what is some advice you give, or you could give our audience, if people are looking for a purpose or a passion or something to do with themselves, you know, even a hobby?
Yeah, you know, I talk about this all the time. For me and for a lot of people, before they really destroyed their lives, they kind of had a passion. They knew what they loved, and they lost that along the way. For them, I would suggest getting back into what it was you loved. And it's difficult because you have a lack of confidence now and a lack of self-esteem, and you don't think you're possible. Especially for me, when I was sober, I was already almost 40 years old. I had a torn ACL in my knee. I mean, it was like, how the hell am I going to make it back into fighting? And, you know, get those doubts out of your head and get back into the basics and do go back to what it is you love to do. Now, if that's the case for people, that's fantastic. If it's not, a lot of people have no idea what they're passionate about. They've been destroying their lives and using drugs and alcohol for the past who knows how long, and they never figured out what they're passionate about yet. That's even better. You know what I mean? Now, here's the problem with that is people are so closed-minded sometimes when they first get sober that they think No, I'm not going to enjoy that. When I first got sober, even though I knew what it was I wanted to do and I had this passion, I still became a yes to almost everything. I didn't know what I liked to do while I was sober. I had no idea. I thought I knew because I knew what I liked to do when I was getting messed up, but I had no idea in reality. So I started saying yes to doing all kinds of crazy yoga things and rock climbing and meditation and different sports and different. And in Southern California, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do, from outdoors at the beach and the mountains to just all kinds of stuff. And if you just start to explore yourself and start to stay open-minded and realize that you do not know what your passion is, and you don't know what you like and don't like, and just try them out. And that's phenomenal, because then if you do something that you knew you weren't going to like and you don't like, great. Now you actually know you don't like it. It's no longer just a theory. And if you thought you weren't going to like something and you try it out and you actually love it, then even better. You know what I mean? You just figured out that you don't already know yourself. You're finding yourself and you're creating yourself now. So
I love that.
Yeah, just get out there.
I think that's such great advice, and to have that open mind and open heart to something, because I feel like you're right. You're kind of reborn in a sense, you know, you have this second chance at life, and like your core values change too. So things that you valued before, you may not value anymore, or the things that you thought you valued, you don't value. So I think all of that really does change the things that we may become interested in, and who knows where that could lead. So I love that, just to say yes to everything.
Absolutely.
And I know that your diet is something that has been very important, obviously, for you to win 2 title belts. And I think just overall, you feel really good physically. I mean, that's what I understood. But can you tell us a little bit more about your plant? Is it plant-based diet that you follow?
Yeah,
how that got started?
Plant-based it's really a vegan diet, but I don't live a vegan lifestyle per se. So I consider it a plant-based diet, and I believe most vegans kind of eat that way for their lifestyle choices, and they don't necessarily always eat the healthiest vegan food. My diet is based around health and nutrition and superfoods and stuff. But I'm such an extremist with a lot of things I do, particularly my diet. So I'm a little hesitant to kind of let people see how I eat and how I diet, because it scares them off in the beginning. And I didn't start out this way. I used to, 10 years ago, I was 210 pounds. I was fat, out of shape. I ate like crap. I was still using drugs. I was smoking, a pack of cigarettes a day. And it didn't happen overnight. If someone had showed me today and the way I eat today, I would have been like, no, there's no way. You're insane and you're not a normal person. I'm not going to follow that. So that being said, I may be a little insane and not that normal when it comes to my diet, but it didn't happen overnight. It started out slowly. Here's the thing. If you don't know what you don't know. So these people that are eating the standard American crappy diet, and they feel better than when they first getting sober. They feel better than they did when they were using drugs and, strung out on whatever. And they think that they feel good. They're like, oh yeah, I feel good. You just don't know that isn't feeling good. I didn't realize. Here, a good example of this happened to me a couple of months ago during my last fight. I was, starving myself a few days before the weigh-ins to actually make weight, and that changed my diet, and it was off. I wasn't getting the nutrients I usually get, and I realized how bad I felt. I was like, wow, I feel awful. And normally that would have been feeling great in the past, because I didn't know what it actually felt like to feel great. When I actually got the nutrition, made the weight and got the nutrition back in me, I was like, oh my God, I normally feel so great. I didn't even realize how bad I felt when I thought I was feeling good, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the thing is, you need to do it as, you need to start with the process. You need to, and another thing I do, I don't just take stuff out of my diet and go crazy because I can't have something. I substitute one thing. If I take out, I started out by taking out coffee and I replaced it with tea. And then I moved down to an herbal tea. I drink more water instead of soda. I drink, I don't eat meat. I stopped eating, red meat at first, but I continued eating chicken and pork and fish. And then I slowly cut out pork. And every time, I don't eat refined sugars or, crazy desserts. But I crave chocolate, and I go and I'll have like a raw vegan chocolate cake that's probably more healthy than what most people eat in a day. But for me, it's my cheat meal, but it still gives me that feeling of, okay, I got my chocolate in for the day,
Yeah, it's all relative, right? But I like what you have to say about, you know, knowing that maybe there is even a better level of feeling good out there, you know, until we explore things, until we try things. And I think for you, like just knowing you, I think that it's great to see that you have kind of begun to do this in small increments, because I think just plunging into anything in life could be a shock to your system. So if anybody's interested in listening now, you know, what do you recommend to try? Just more salads, try some like greens, add a smoothie, something like that?
Definitely all those things. So it's really difficult. People come to me all the time and, you know, for, you know, advice, and it's like, well, you're not going to want to eat like me unless your goals are what my goals are. So first of all, it depends on what your goals are. Second of all, it depends on what your diet is now. So if someone was coming from a place of a completely awful diet and their goal was to be a professional athlete, right, they may have a similar goal as me, but where I would start them off would not be the same thing that I would eat, because it would be a back step for me where it's a forward step for them. So it really depends on where they're going and where they're starting. But as a general rule, definitely more vegetables, more fruit, vegetables. I do a lot of green juice and wheatgrass and smoothies. I make smoothies every day. In fact, I just drank one. It was like dark, dark green. It was really intense. But you can just start with, you throw a little bit of spinach in with some bananas and blueberries, some almond milk, some almond butter, maybe some coconut water, or coconut meat, and some raw cacao. You know what I mean? You don't even taste the spinach or kale that you throw in there. You taste the chocolatey, banana-y, fruity flavor, and it's, you know, it's phenomenal.
And how do you get your protein?
That, you know, there's a lot of, you know, animals in the jungle that are absolutely huge, all muscle, that don't eat meat. You know what I mean? Protein is found in all kinds, you know, nuts and seeds and almond butter. And I take a protein supplement. I drink a lot of
chlorella
and spirulina as a protein supplement, or brown rice, hemp seeds. And then just the amino acids that are loaded in all the superfoods and vegetables that I eat are proteins for my body. You know what I mean? I'm a pretty, you know, hardcore athlete, and for me to be doing what I do on a regular basis without enough protein just isn't possible. So it's definitely possible to do.
Oh, I love that you say that, because I feel like that is one of the people's, I think, biggest misconceptions of, you know, kind of having to eat meat because of the protein, you know, piece of it.
I don't know. I haven't researched it yet, but I just saw that one of the guys in the Olympics this year from the U.S. that just broke all the records in powerlifting in the trials doesn't eat any meat, which is
incredible.
You think of athletes like long distance runners or triathlons or stuff like that being vegan because they don't need as much explosive power, but for actual powerlifting weightlifter to be able to do it is inspiring, and it kind of breaks all the rules of the mindsets that people have that you don't get enough protein on a plant-based diet.
Right, absolutely. I love that you shared that with us, because I think it's nice to hear from a person that is actually doing it, you know, and successfully. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah, and so let's talk about a little bit, you know, you're a biofeedback specialist. How did you get into that? And for people that don't know what biofeedback is, can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I when I started out for this company, I was, you know, a tech at the Sober Living, and then kind of started to manage the Sober Living House, and then the position for that kind of just came up. Now, I had done a little bit of work in the past with a friend of mine in this kind of sound therapy thing that he was into, where he made this chair that had these transducers built in, and he played these certain frequency noises and music and vibrations. So when the owner of the company asked me about this position, I was intrigued, and I did some research and I started to figure out what it was. So it's what it's called is biosound therapy, and it's kind of a combination of biofeedback, which is really cool. And the more I learn about that, the more I'm blown away by it. It can be used for all kinds of stuff, including athletes use it, you know, Olympians use it and stuff like that. And it's a combination of that and this sound therapy, which is this relaxing lounge chair with these subwoofers built into it, and you lie down and the headphones go on and play this. It's like a sound massage where the music actually vibrates through your body at a certain frequency that induces this really deep state of relaxation. And then once you're in this, really this state of brainwave, state of relaxation, it goes into a guided imagery meditation that kind of soothes you and relaxes you, and you can focus on different things with that. And then it finishes with a cool little video. There's a TV screen up in front. That's kind of the sound therapy relaxation portion of it. The biofeedback, again, can be used for different things. In this case, what we use it for, we put this little monitor on your finger, and it reads what's called your heart rate variability, which is kind of determined by different things in your body physically, your pulse, your blood pressure, all that. So basically it tells us how your body is physically reacting. Now, this is determined by a lot of things, including, you know, your sleep, your how much you're working out, your diet. But more importantly, what we're focusing on is controlled by your mind. Your mind and how you're thinking and how you're breathing controls how physically your body feels. So the computer breaks it down into three zones, low, medium, or high. They call it coherence or cardiac coherence. And most people start out when we first put the monitor on in this low coherence zone. It's when their body is a little bit off, a little bit agitated. They're not synced up with their mind. And the gentleman in the headphones goes through a little breathing technique, tells you how to breathe and where to focus your attention and how to where to have this little mental shift in your attention. And in doing so, almost all the time, we watch the monitor go in their body from low coherence to medium and to high, which means that their mind and their bodies are kind of syncing up, and they're in this zone where you really want to be and you're comfortable and relaxed. And in seeing this and on the actual computer and the hard data, it kind of teaches you that doing this breathing technique or you having this focusing technique can actually calm down your body. And when you use that in everyday life, if you're in traffic and somebody cuts you off and you start freaking out, you use this breath again, and you use this technique and you calm yourself down. Or for a drug addict, if they're in a bad neighborhood and they start thinking about wanting to use, and you get this, if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, you get this feeling in your body where you like, you're just like off and everything's kind of crazy. Well, you go back to this technique and you breathe a certain way and you focus your attention a certain way and you actually physically calm yourself down.
That's so incredible. So it's like one of the, from what it sounds like, and I've only tried it once, but I really enjoyed it. It's just such a tool to really have and build that muscle to kind of develop what comes out of that, you know, what it has made you feel like. Yeah, that's fantastic. And like you said, I think we all have a lot of sense memory. We're all triggered by certain things, whether it's a smell or a neighborhood or a person or whatever that is. And especially in the first, you know, I think first couple years in recovery, I think it's important to have these tools to kind of talk yourself through things, talk yourself out from a really high stress situation.
Absolutely. So, it's just another tool to add to the toolbox that really about becoming a well-rounded human being.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jay, the topic of identity, I think, is very important in terms of when we start new paths, because I think whether it's you're recovering from an addiction or you are just trying to create a healthier life for yourself, or you're getting out of a relationship, or you're whatever that is, our identities, I think, constantly shift through our lives, but especially never as much, I think, as when you are leaving behind drugs and alcohol or some kind of addictive behavior. So when you did get sober and your identity, I mean, obviously the person you are today is driven and efficient and, you know, energetic and not maybe who you were before, like you were saying, overweight and lazy and not invested in his health. I mean, how does it feel to kind of have such a shift in your identity? And is it something you talk about with clients?
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels amazing, and it is amazing, and it's difficult. Even only, you know, a couple years ago, I was not even close to the person I am today. Most people, whether they think so or not, in the moment when they're first getting clean and getting their life back together, they have a low self-esteem, and they're a little bit broken, and they don't have the hope and the dreams that they're able to accomplish as they may later on. And for me, and I advocate this a lot for, you know, people in early recovery, is to do these little esteemable acts, I call them, and that helps build self-esteem. These small things like making your bed every morning, like brushing your teeth every morning, like cleaning up after yourself when you make a mess, like when you're done, you know, stirring your coffee with a spoon, don't leave the spoon in the sink. Just rinse it off and put it in the dishwasher. These little things start to build up, and they start to build a sense of accomplishment and a sense of self-esteem. And in doing that, you start to rebuild who you are, and you start to get a little bit of confidence and a little bit of pride in what you do. And that really, for me, that really ignited the flame in which was the catalyst for me to get to where I am today. I still struggle with, I have kind of these two identities, whereas in being in recovery, you kind of want to kind of, you know, you know, maybe sit down and listen to people and you meditate and you kind of have to be a little bit soft and gentle on yourself. And if you, you know, you make a mistake or you don't do something right one day, you need to have that forgiveness and that love. And being this competitive athlete, I need to almost be the opposite. I need to really push through the pain and not be, you know, not be okay with not doing enough and making sure I'm at the gym and training as hard as I can every single day, especially if I have a competition coming up. So for me, it's the two different identities there tend to be difficult to balance sometimes, but they're also mm-hmm. what keep me in balance at the same time, because with just one and not the other, I tend to go a little too far, because that's just who I am. I'm a bit of an extremist, and I go big or I go home with everything I do. So having that softer, gentler side, being able to meditate and kind of have this connection to this bigger thing in life that, you know, that kind of connects us all and makes me grounded and peaceful. And then having the other side where I'm super intense and I have no excuses and I do what I have to do. And I just shut off the complaints and the excuses in my mind. And I get my body to the gym and I push through the pain and I do it. Those two really balance me out for me personally.
Yeah, and I was just thinking as you're talking, you have to have that self-compassion to a degree, no matter if you're pushing yourself or you're trying to be more balanced. I think when you're somebody who cares about yourself, you're going to start doing the next right thing, hopefully. You know, you're not going to have, hopefully, that inner talk that is self-destructive or self-sabotaging, you know, in major ways. I mean, I know you have to push yourself as an athlete.
But, yeah, no, absolutely. But, even though the two are opposite extremes of the spectrum, they complement each other completely. And if I was lacking in one, I would be failing in the other, because they one keeps me grounded in both senses. So it's really huge for me to keep a balance amongst the two extremes in my life in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that you talked about esteemable acts, because I think that's like the positive domino effect. And something that actually helped me a lot when I was changing my life was to make sure that I, you know, basically understood that, you know, doing little tiny things of self-care every single day creates this feeling of being proud of myself, or feeling like, oh, I got this, or oh, I'm taking care of myself. Or, you know, even if it's a very subconscious thing, very quiet level, you still are telling yourself, wow, I did that. Or, oh, I'm proud of myself. I took a run, or I went to the gym, or I took a shower, I made my bed. All these little things that are, you like you said, are just small, but yet they add up so much. And it's all of a sudden you have integrity again, and you have purpose, and you see yourself in a different light, and it gives you a contrast to the person that you used to be.
Absolutely.
And I think contrast.
And you said,
yeah.
You used the word integrity, which I love, which is a huge, huge part of my life today, which was nowhere in my life at all, you know, a few years back. So that's huge. When I do something, or I say I'm going to do something today, you better believe I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? Back in the past, that wasn't the case. And then
right.
And the more I do that, the more I become used to, when I say I'm going to do something, following through with it, and people can count on me. The great thing about that is today, if I want to accomplish something, all I have to do is say I'm going to accomplish it. Think about it. Understand it's possible. Say I'm going to accomplish it, and I do every single time, because that's the way I'm built now. That's my muscle memory. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. So if I want to do something and I say it's going to happen, I make it happen, and it's
right.
Great.
I love that.
And
I love that you say
another
that.
Thing
yeah.
I can give you, when you were talking a moment ago about the esteemable
yeah.
acts and stuff, I thought about this situation last night at my sober living, and some of the clients had gone out to a birthday party with an old client, and they have an 11 o'clock curfew, and they hadn't said anything to me about being, if they had come to me earlier in the day and said, we're going to so-and-so's birthday party, could we possibly have an extension for our curfew and come home at midnight or whatever, I probably would have okayed it, but they didn't do that. So at 10:30, they give me a call saying, can we be late for curfew? And I said, at this point, no, if you had asked me beforehand, you can't. You need to stick to your integrity. Your curfew is 11 o'clock. Now, as I was sitting there with one of the techs that works with us, we're debating on whether or not they were going to make it home on time. And my thought process was this. I think they are going to make it home on time, even though they don't want to, because I respect them, and I show every one of them as much respect as I can, and I do as much as I can for those people. And I believe that at this point, they realize that for them to just show up late after I specifically, they asked me and I told them to be home on time, would be disrespectful to me. And them knowing that and telling them what they have to do and when they have to do it, me showing them respect precipitates them showing me respect in return. And sure enough, they walked in the door at 5 minutes of 11 and they were happy to have gotten home on time. And it was great. And I really loved it. And I really, you know, I thanked them for it.
No, that's awesome. Oh, Jay, thank you so much for that's such a great example. And thank you so much for being on with me today. It's just, you're an inspiration and it's somebody that I know is going to change so many lives in the world on so many levels. So I really appreciate you being with us and, you know, let everybody know that Jay Viola, V-I-O-L-A, you have an email or any website or anything people want to, I know you're...
I'm in the process of putting together a website. I have, you can find me on Facebook or Instagram.
Okay, great.
And, you know, if you see me anywhere, I love to talk about this stuff. I love to, you know, help people and inspire people with diet and workout and anything I can. So feel free to come up and talk to me. And I love people to come out and support my fights. I have a fight coming up August 19th in San Diego, so...
Great. Well, thank you, Jay. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. Remember to catch every episode of Rewired Radio. Just hit subscribe and rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. This episode of Rewired Radio has been produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health talk 24/7. I'm Erica Spiegelman. You could find me at Erica Spiegelman on Twitter. Also check out my show page at RadioMD.com for all my past episodes. Thank you for listening and stay well.